Colombia accepts $221 million deal and adopts anti-Semitism measures. They had to be paid. In simple language, they had to be paid in order to adopt anti-Semitism measures. Is teaching racism not part of a curriculum, not part of education? Well, to answer that question right now, it's Ilan Berman. Hi, Ilan.
Oh, good to be back.
It's always good to have you. Ilan is the Senior Vice President of American Foreign Policy Council. So Columbia University, you know, they're quite happy to be paid to not teach racism. Is that correct? Do I have that correct?
Right. I actually think it's backwards. I think there's a ongoing conversation between the university and the administration in terms of fines. And it's nested in this larger conversation that's happening here in Washington, which I think, you know, your listeners may have seen the broad contours of, but they but to get into the specifics, when the anti-Semitic protests broke out post October 7th on U.S. campuses, there was an opening for the Biden administration, which was in office at the time, to really crack down and to do so through measures like executive orders over which the White House had authority. The administration, for its own calculations, because of a very activist left-wing base in the Democratic Party, chose not to do that and chose really not to apply any meaningful pressure at all on universities like Columbia, also universities like Harvard and MIT, to really force them to change their behavior. It had the authority to do that because all of these universities, without exception, are either current or former recipients of federal aid from the U.S. government. So there was an ability for the U.S. government to sort of reach in and say, hey, if you don't provide equal protection to your students, including to Jewish students, then you will lose your eligibility for future government funding. That is the sort of the backdrop of what's happening now, because the Trump administration, since coming in, has really made this a very public, very high profile issue, using Columbia as a test case, but even more dramatically using Harvard as a test case. And Harvard has now been stripped of something like $2 billion in terms of federal fund eligibility. So the pressure that's being exerted on Columbia, and I think the ruling is actually the reverse, so that Columbia is forced to pay a fine for not doing it. But I think it's part of that broader conversation, because the administration is now not just seized of this issue, but really exerting a lot of federal pressure to try to effectuate change.
So am I completely misunderstanding the story here?
So I think
the story that I'm reading is, it says Columbia University has agreed to a settlement exceeding $220 million with the federal government to reinstate previously canceled federal research funding. The university announced
It's the reverse, right? Columbia will pay penalties of $220 million in order to reinstate eligibility for federal funds, because the administration has threatened that because Columbia was egregiously lax in allowing anti-Semitism to proliferate, they would lose their federal grant eligibility if they didn't do this.
So it's sort of a
payoff to the U.S. government as sort of a demonstration of good faith that they're going to do better in the future. But that remains to be seen.
So interesting. I mean, we've got a situation here, and, you know, there was a guest who we wanted to talk to. He's a scientist, right? Or he's a biologist. And he had these cards, and he's made these gaming cards with scientists on, real scientists, because it's to make science cool. And he studied at Harvard. And then he asked, before the interview, he said, you know, can you just send us, or send him a station information? When he found out that we were a Jewish station, you know, when he saw our media kit, he said, no, he doesn't want to come on. He doesn't want to come on.
So I think, sadly, that's sort of very much par for the course.
Yes, and when I heard that he was from Harvard, it's not surprising. It's not surprising at all.
And so the problem with the approach of the administration, and I think it's an understandable problem because the administration is really exerting a lot of pressure because its predecessor really did nothing. The Biden administration had the opportunity to really weigh in meaningfully. They chose not to do that. The amount of pressure that the Trump administration is applying now to universities like Harvard has really, I think, has the potential to backfire, not because it's not pressure, it's certainly pressure, but because it allows Harvard University to take the sort of the moral high ground to position itself as a champion of free speech, when the issue here isn't really about free speech.
No.
The issue here is about equal access for students of different races and religions, and it's about a university that's allowed this very noxious, anti-Semitic, hostile environment to proliferate. But because the administration is taking a very broad pressure approach, there's not a lot of nuance, at least right now.
You know, being involved with the American Foreign Policy Council, if you were advertising for a job and somebody, well, you got all these CVs, right, these applications for the job, and you saw on there that somebody had a break. They had started off studying at one particular university and then they finished or they graduated another university, and they might have been expelled, they might have been somehow their studies were interrupted. Would you hire them?
So I think this is a question that companies here in the United States are approaching in real time. Certainly, there are laws on the books here in the U.S. that protect against certain things. They protect against discrimination based on affiliation, based on religion, based on disability, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But in terms of political speech, right, because this is very clearly political speech, this is much more of a gray area. And there are companies like corporations in New York that have made it very clear that they will create a criteria for exclusion if they are looking at candidates that, identify that they were at universities like Columbia after October 7th, during that period of the protest. And I think that really speaks to the fact that this is a legal gray area, and companies have the ability to sort of to use this criteria as a criteria for exclusion, because this is bleeding over very much into the employment sector.
Ilan, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for setting me straight in terms of my understanding of reading news from non-English speakers. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Ilan Berman, Senior Vice President for the American Foreign Policy Council, talking about Columbia University.